Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Indie Comic Spotlight, the show where we spend time looking at a graphic novel or an ongoing series from a company other than the big two. The hope here is we can do a deep dive in an indie comic you may have missed or give you a chance to talk about one of your favorites with us on social media afterward. I'm your host, Tony Farina of DC Comics News and Fantastic Universes. Now, normally, this is the part where I introduce the guest and we talk about the comic a little bit before we get going into the deep dive, but this week we have a special guest. It is the writer of the topic that we're discussing, which is Image Comics' Bitch Planet. I was lucky enough to get Kelly Sue DeConnick to come on the show, so I recorded that before I recorded this. So let me just give you a little bit of background, and then we'll jump into the interview. So the transition will be quite as seamless because Kelly Sue's not sitting here listening to me ramble at this part. Our time was limited and I wanted to get right to it and get as much of an interview with her as I could. And you're going to be really excited. It's a great interview. So, Bitch Planet is from Kelly Sue DeConnick, which many of you know. She is the mastermind behind Carol Danvers' Captain Marvel. She's in the movie Captain Marvel. She is the reason that Captain Marvel is who we all know and love today. She's a brilliant writer, and she teamed up with Valentine Delandro, who is an artist many people probably have seen from X Factor, to create a science fiction, women in prison, space exploitation comic called Bitch Planet. It is one of the best comics I've read in years. It is highly relevant today. We just recorded this last Friday in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of all of the racial strife in America, and it's really an important conversation that she and I have, and I wanted to get it out right away. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Kelly Sue. So I was going to cover Bitch Planet anyway, and usually I have like a guest on to come on, and we like try to be, I'm a teacher, so we try to be a little more, try to look at it from a bit of an academic lens, and so then I reached out to you, and here it is. I'm on your mailing list, and that's actually how it happened.
Yeah, we've corresponded, right?
We have, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, which is the coolest thing. I can't believe you spend that much time on us. That's very nice of you.
It doesn't take as much time as people think. I get on once to see the birthdays in the morning. It doesn't take very long.
It's very cool, though. I've got like a bunch of questions, but I was hoping it would just kind of be a conversation. And sure. Obviously it's weird to have the writer of something on because then I can't just wax poetic about what I think it means because you're here to tell me what
sure it you can.
Actually means. Right. The English teacher in me is like, well, the Hey Kids patriarchy pages. We'll talk about
that. That said, though, I mean, there's an interesting conversation to be had about, like, if you see something different in the work than what I see, I can speak to what my intention is, but I think it would be hubris for me to say you're wrong. Do you know what I mean? I think the work exists outside of the creator.
Right, because once you, as a creator yourself, once you put it out there, it's up to us to take from it what we will. Well, and that's since we're already talking about that. So the Hey Kids, the patriarchy, I have to say the first time I read in the very first issue, that's like milk out the nose funny, but it's also really disturbing. So what I love about them is they set, because the book itself, Bitch Planet itself, obviously has this like 60s and 70s kind of exploitation movie feel, but those ads are like even further throwbacks to earlier comics. So what was your reason for that? Were those like ideas you wanted to get into the book, but you couldn't figure out a way to write those into a certain character? Or that's kind of the way I felt with those ads, as you were, and there was the personal ads, which of course were clues to things that happened later, but the ads themselves, were those like false starts, or was that always the plan to have those Hey Kids patriarchy ads in there?
No, it was always the plan. The thing that changed was it was always going to be that yellow page.
Oh, okay.
And after I think two of them, I was like, man, now I'm bored with this. and so it was like, what other formats can we use that are the same kind of thing, but are not like the exact repetition of the, cause it was very quickly became, oh, this is going to be the same joke over and over again, you know?
Yeah, but the joke, I mean, it was the same, but those ads were in every comic. So if they
were totally were. And you know, I have told this story before, but my signature to this day, and I have two different signatures. I have a signature when I sign your comics, and I have a signature when I sign a contract, right?
Of course.
Although every once in a while I will get them confused, which is very funny. But the signature I use when I sign a contract is the signature that I got from sending a dollar off to an ad in the back of a comic book when I was 8 years old, and they sent me back a bunch of signatures, and I picked one and practiced it, and that is my signature to this day.
Your legal one?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. I do not remember that one. I always like the X-ray eyes. That was, you know, yeah. That was always my favorite one. I did never had money to get that, you know, because most of the, I was always buying sex.
It didn't work.
No. But so those Hey Kids Patriarchy ads were really, that must have taken as much, it feels to me as it must have taken as much time to write those out as it did to write the actual comic itself, because they were so detailed. And there were so much happening there. And as I'm reading through it, trying to figure out what is reflective of what I just read, what's a clue for what's coming, you know, down the line.
Yeah.
So, did you write those? You said you always planned on doing them, but did you write that absent of the book? Or like you wrote, you know, here's book one script, you sent that off to Valentine, and then you're working on that in that moment, or was the story of Bitch Planet done, and then those were add-ins once Image picked it up?
Well, the whole script wasn't written until Image had picked it up. So Image picked it up off of a 3-line pitch.
What were the 3 lines?
It was like, Pretty Deadly was more of a success than anybody expected it to be. And so I got an email from Eric that said, what's next? And I said, Valentine Delandro and I want to do a science fiction, women in prison, feminist satire kind of gladiatorial thing. Working title is Bitch Planet. But I can change it. And he wrote back and said, I would very much like to publish something called Bitch Planet. So we got the thumbs up off of just that.
The Eric being Eric Larson?
No, Eric Stevenson.
Eric Stevenson. Oh, okay. Damn, that's amazing.
Yeah. So that was like, well, all right, then off we go. And then they never saw it again until we turned it in. Done.
What? The all 10 issues?
No. First issue.
It's issue one. Oh, okay. Wow. That's spectacular. That's why I'm doing the show, because to me, indie comics, now, of course, obviously the world knows you as that person who is in Captain Marvel for 2 seconds. No. but.
My acting career. Woo.
You were there. Yes. If you blinked, you missed me. I guess Dexter's in that somewhere. I can't seem to find him. Is that true? Is he in there too, Dexter? Is he on screen somewhere?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, I the internet is full of lies and bullshit. Okay, so no, it was not just you. But anyway, obviously, because you've worked with Marvel, obviously, very spectacularly with that run, what is the, you know, obviously Marvel's not going to publish Bitch Planet, so... If Image hadn't said, hey, let's do Bitch Planet, that's great, would you and Valentine have gone to Dark Horse or tried somewhere else or
done? No, we would have pitched something else to Image.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it was Image was where I wanted to continue to publish. And so I would have come up with something else that suited their line.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
Which isn't to say we wouldn't have done Bitch Planet on our own, but probably later we would have probably come up with something else.
Okay. You would have done something else because you were digging working at Image. And I, you know, and obviously I love what they do. And this is like the 5th or 6th Image book I've done. And this is only, I've only been doing this for about 4 or 5 months. So, you know, really Image heavy, because I was a teenager when the Image Revolution happened. So I got to watch all of my heroes say, yeah, fuck it, we're going to do it ourselves. And that was really cool to watch. And so I've grown up, you know, and become an adult with Image. And I, what I love about Image and what I love about this book is I don't even think in that 91, 92 Image Revolution, this book would have existed. They wouldn't have done this. And yet now here it is. And so Bitch Planet is, for people who are tuning in, they probably will have read this already, but if people don't know, it's, as Kelly Sue said, it's this futuristic space prison where the lead character may or may not have to send Pam Grier a check. I don't know if she has ever commented on that in any way, shape, or form, but...
The model is actually a woman, it's a loose model. The inspiration is a woman from Valentine's Gym.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, yeah. Does she know this?
I don't know if she knows or not. It's not photo roughed or anything.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But he mentioned her once and like, I think sent me a picture of the two of them working out. And it was like, she was largely the inspiration for Cam. And I'm like, oh, hell yeah, I totally see that.
That's amazing. That's so cool. What a cool, I mean, I hope she knows. She's like, because I love Cam. I mean, here's the thing. There are some really unlikable characters, obviously. But it's an interesting concept because, you know, these women are technically, air quote, they're prisoners. They're non-compliant. And obviously, the whole point of Bitch Planet, and this is my read, so to help tell me that I'm wrong or tell me I'm right. So Eleanor Doone is the first female president, and all the men in the world freak the fuck out. And so they have to change the way the world is done because they just kept thinking a woman would never be elected president. That happens off screen.
Yeah, so this whole thing... I was thinking about, and this predates where we are now.
Of course, well, we'll talk about that. It's important to talk about now, too.
I was thinking about just the backlash to the Obama presidency, and this was during the Obama presidency.
Of course,
right?
Yeah, right.
So I was thinking about the racist backlash to the Obama presidency. And I was like, can you imagine if it had been a black woman, you know? And then was just like, shit, yes, I can. And I think it would have gone a little something like this.
Yeah, right. You know? And it's insane. And the idea that the overreaction, the overcorrection, and that's what I was going to ask you about. And so obviously you've already said it, because in Bitch Planet, there's an overcorrection. The men freak out because a black woman was elected president, which of course means it wasn't that 100% of all the women in the country voted for Eleanor Doane. It means that some men must have voted for her too, because that's the only way that was going to work. And so that instead of accepting that, they change the entire way that women are treated, and anything can essentially make you non-compliant. Non-compliant. I love the pictures, by the way, in the later book that you did, the five that come after, where there were actually like people in cosplay wearing the non-compliant stuff. That must have been something amazing to
see.
It is so cool. There was like, that was really, to say lovely, where these women are dressed in orange prison jumpsuits, but still it was lovely to see somebody who loved it so much. But so this overcorrection. And so of course now here we are in 2016. So this book came out, the first issue was in 2014. It ended in 2017. So you unfortunately were putting this book out at the time when the real overcorrection to Obama's presidency happened. So did that change the way, I mean, obviously you put the children of Eleanor in right from the beginning. So did the real life alter the way that you guys finished up the 10 issues?
Yeah, and I'm distracted. I know this isn't how you mean this, but like...
Yeah, no.
But yeah, the overcorrection feels like the wrong word.
That's fine.
Because I would say backlash or reaction or something, because overcorrection to me suggests that there was a correction to be made, but we just went too far with it.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, that's fair.
Like, there was no correction to be made. There was nothing right. wrong. And again, I know that's not how you mean it.
Of course, but, yeah.
But just because language is powerful and there was nothing. I know you know this.
Yeah.
But let us give it voice.
Please.
There's nothing to be corrected about having a black president.
Of course.
There would be nothing to be corrected about having a black woman president.
Correct.
You know, there was nothing that required correction over or under.
You know? Correct. So, yes, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and so this is this backlash or this absurd, hissy fit.
This hissy fit. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
From frightened people who do have legitimate grievances, but not about the things that they. So anyway, this is why I always say that as an artist, my job is to put questions in the world. If I had answers, I should be in civil service. I don't have answers, so I don't know how to fix it. But I can put questions in the world. And in this case, my questions were: what if it had been a woman? And also, can we do exploitation without being exploitative?
I think you did. I want to talk about that too, but I just, so did, was your original intention to only do 10? Again, the internet is full of lies. I've read that you guys have thought about doing 30 and that you only did 10.
Not done. You know that, right?
It is for sure still coming.
Oh yeah, issue 11's done.
Oh.
But we won't solicit it until we have the full next arc.
Oh, okay. Hooray. I mean, right, again, because some things say it's ongoing and some things show the end date is 2017.
We're too slow. And also this book became incredibly hard to produce in the contemporary environment.
Right.
That's a thing that I'm like, who wants to read this right now? Bless your heart. Thank you.
I do. I absolutely do. Yeah. I want to read it because I want to see the thing that shows me, like you said, you're not putting answers in the world, but I want to see that I'm not, you know, like my wife and I are empty nesters. So we like sit around and look at each other and look outside and I'm like, what the fuck, man? How is no one else thinks this is crazy? And so what I love about Bitch Planet, I shouldn't laugh when I read it, but I do. There's something.
No, you should. You absolutely should. It's intended to be a comedy, a very dark comedy, but a comedy.
It is. Well, good. And so to me, I do want to read it because that's what I'm saying. As I think you intended it as a what if, and now you're living in the it is. It went from what if to reality. So I would like to see how the folks in this, and the nice thing about it being a comic book is you can trap them in amber if you want to. And the next thing, issue 11 can be the day after Kylie does what she does. And
issue 11 is is Kylie's solo issue. So issue 11 is trapped in amber. It goes back to when Kylie was a child and goes through the moment of the assassination.
Wow.
Okay. But then 12 skips time to, well, I don't want to tell you, but
yeah,
it's
no, yeah.
12 jumps ahead from, so 11 takes place congruent to the end of 10, but also going backwards. And then 12 is later after the repercussions of that event.
Now we see what's going down. Yeah, because obviously there's a lot happening at the end of that. And again, you know, I know it's impossible to cover all 10 issues here. So, you know, people just obviously will need to go run out and read this book if you haven't, and you have missed out. So, and I get what you're saying now, maybe right now. So I'm pleased to know that it's coming, and I will obviously wait with, and it'll obviously still stay in Image. So it'll just be sometime next year, maybe we're looking at to see.
I hope, Val and I are our own worst enemies because, you know, each one of us is like, no, take your time, do what you need, you know, do what you need to do, you know, nice. Get it right. And neither one of us pushes the other one to turn anything in. And the good news is we really love each other. We're really supportive of one another. Our families are close. Our kids get along. His wife
is very close. Oh, so he's in Portland too?
Huh? No, he's in Toronto.
Oh, okay. So you don't actually get to, you're not physically like just across town where you can like.
No, but like, you know, their family came to visit us.
Oh, nice.
Stayed with us.
That's awesome.
And we got to really spend a lot of time together, and we want to do that again. Like,
that's,
you know, there's a genuine affection for this group of people. So that's the good news.
Yeah.
Also, he's brilliant and enormously talented. The bad news is we're just absolutely terrible about enabling one another to fiddle with shit forever, you know?
Well, if it comes out perfect, then that's okay. And so, and you know, an image is giving you guys the latitude to do that too.
Well, they would much rather we didn't, but there's not much they can't come to our house and sit here and make us.
Right, because that's the nice thing about when you creator owned, you're like, hey, creators, we own. So
yes.
You guys
yes.
gave them the little five, you know, the five issue mini stories, which were delightful. And there's no way we would even have remotely time to talk about those, but those were fun. I am curious what it was like for your husband to write in your world. That must have been an interesting, did he do that? Did Matt do that separate from you and then show it to you after? Or was he writing with you, like looking over his shoulder in that universe?
No. So, I mean, I was pretty hands-off with his because he knows he's real good, you know? I had a heavier editorial hand with some of the newer folks. But the most interesting thing about the triple feature books, and triple feature for anybody who didn't pick it up, it's, we did an anthology set in the Bitch Planet world, and the reason we did it was because Bitch Planet is largely a political satire that is largely about women of color, and it is written by a white woman and drawn by a black man. So neither one of us occupies the space at the center of our story, and that incurs a debt. And so in order to make some progress towards offsetting that debt, we wanted to do what we could do to bring new voices into the industry with an emphasis on women of color, hiring preference for women of color.
Nice.
And so the idea being that they could then take these published samples from a indie but established title with an established publisher and parlay that into other work.
Nice. Well, is great. There are some gems in there.
Yeah, there absolutely are. What was fascinating and it was a hard assignment because we were, and it's not all new folks, we balanced it out so we would be able to get new names in front of people but use some established names to sell the issues, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
We gave them a really, really hard assignment. Like, you're relatively new to the industry, relatively new to the craft. We're going to have you do the two hardest things you can do. Write satire and write short.
yeah, they only got, was it three stories per book? So.
Eight pages.
Eight pages, yeah.
Short is hard. Satire is insanely hard. And so it was a gauntlet. But the good news here is, you know, hey, if you can do this, everything after this is going to be easy.
Yeah.
So that was that experience. What was really fascinating to me was the pitches we were getting in the beginning were grueling. Like, they were very dark, almost horror pitches.
Oh, wow.
And that was hard because it was like, wow, is this how our book is being read?
That's interesting.
So this is a conversation that Val and I have had frequently in the time since, when we've been talking about how Bitch Planet could possibly come back in this environment. We've been talking about how we need to really crank up the satire because we think it's hilarious to say, because it is the least subtle book on the planet.
Right.
But, I mean, Planet Earth, not even Bitch Planet, right?
Right.
But in some ways, I think the satire was too subtle. It needs to be, because it was being read straight.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But that goes back to the talk about the exploitation, is that, so the best thing that you guys do, it's like the obligatory shower scene. And then here, you know, you've got this planet of female prisoners. And so of course there's going to be a shower scene. And that was funny that you called it the obligatory shower scene. And that was really, I chortled. And I was like, of course, this is here. But then it's handled in such a way that the power structure flips almost immediately. And Cam takes control of it because she's badass and everybody should love her and want a poster of her on the wall. And so she takes control away from that. But you didn't stop doing what you didn't stop with the nudity ever. You went out of your way to make sure that those scenes weren't titillizing in any way, shape, or form. And yet, yeah, that was going to be my question. So it sounds like maybe some people could still see those scenes and miss the point. And so it's like, when you originally drafted it, the obligatory shower scene, was that always in your mind? Or did you do that to be like, just in case people get the wrong idea that I'm actually writing an exploitation comic, I'm not making fun of that?
No, I mean, no, it was always written as the obligatory shower scene.
It was, you know, awesome.
Because there was always something sort of, it's always been very self-aware. But there are two shower scenes in that issue, actually.
Yeah.
The obligatory shower scene is it's the lesbian makeout scene with Rennell and Fanny.
That's right. That happened first. Yeah.
Our goal there was to flip the power. And our goal with the book has always been to present the nudity in a very matter-of-fact way. There's a lot of nudity, right. I'm gonna put a pin in that.
Okay.
So the first shower scene, we flip it so you are watching the watcher. So there's the makeout scene, but the makeout scene is gradually overtaken. You never really get a good look at it. It's overtaken by a larger and larger panel of the guy's eye watching it through the wall. So you never get to see what he wants so badly to see. You are looking at him. And the point of that is to kind of indict us as viewers and consumers about this, the sort of dishonesty of our role in this kind of consumption of these bodies, right? And then so that's one shower scene. And then there's the second shower scene, which is Cam's performative seduction of the guy, which is the one that you were talking about. Obligatory shower scene is actually the Rennell Fanny scene.
That's right. Okay. See, and it's funny that for me, the scene that mattered was when Cam dupes the guy, and I completely forgot about that because you weren't showing anything. It wasn't supposed to be like, this is super sexy. This is just like people making out in the shower because they're a couple. That's what couples do. And you're supposed to be grossed out by this guy watching. But for me, the big moment was when she, you know,
right,
him and took the whole story. Yeah.
So the statement in the first one is the obstruction of your view. And then the statement in the second one is that she performs. So then it's the shower scene, right? And but you see her body in pieces. You see Valentine has chopped her into panels, and so she's commodified herself in this performance. And then the indictment of the voyeur is complete when she pulls him through the wall. And then the most explicit imagery, nudity, is then of him.
Right.
Right? So we get then the three panels on his dick.
Yeah. And he's fully exposed. Right. Yes. And I think it's just so well done. And again, so that's what's surprising to me is that you were saying those pitches were really dark and like horror, when it was pretty clear to me you weren't trying to, you were, it's not light. There's nothing light about the book, but you were, I mean, like I said, I laugh in that dark way that you want me to. But like I laugh and I feel that what you guys were saying, what I get from it is, these things are happening and we're making fun of these things that happened. We're making fun of the current environment, but we're also making fun of the fact that for years and years, these movies existed and these movies still exist. Movies like what Bitch Planet could have been if it were in the hands of somebody else are still being made. And the scarier part is people see something like Bitch Planet or the movie that I thought of, I just watched recently. It's an older, it's 2018 movie, Assassination Nation. Did you see that? Mm-mm. It was billed as The Purge meets Heathers. So it's like, okay, I'm going to check that out. And it's these four like 18-year-old high school girls who the town turns on and it becomes a bloody gore fest. And my concern was that the people would watch this movie and they would identify with the men who are coming after these four girls instead of with them who are the heroes, who are the victims, but who are taking their power back. And so it seemed to me you went out of your way to make sure no one was really like turned on or like, yeah, I'm glad there's so much, you know, the way you handled it was in such a real stark, slap you in the face way. So I just wonder, you know, if people were missing, it's not subtle, but I don't
know. Yeah, I think people are just bummed, you know, by the time we were doing the triple feature, you know, it was after the election, people were upset, people were bummed. It was hard, you know, I get it. I totally get it. That's witness the fact that there hasn't been Bitch Planet since, right? It's not because I think, oh, this will be a lot of fun to write and I just don't do it, you know?
Right, yeah. No, that's fair.
But it's not, so I want to make sure that I'm not, I'm certainly not anti-sex or anti-sexuality but it's the disingenuousness of both commodifying a woman's sexuality and then judging her for it, right? So I actually love exploitation films. I absolutely love them, but it's a problematic love, right?
Okay.
It's like, because so many of them purport to be empowering, but they're not. That is not to say that none of them are, you know, but a lot of them, especially this sort of women in prison genre, really doesn't do what it pretends to do. And that was what we wanted to examine, was why do I love this thing, but what is it about it that I love? Like, you know, I love the moment when she gets up and wipes the blood off her lip and you know shit is going down, you know?
Yeah.
But does she have to be sexually assaulted and dehumanized to get there? You know, like that's
right.
Right. And as viewers, when that kind of scene is staged, it's often staged in a way where her, where it's meant to be arousing.
Right.
Right?
It shouldn't be.
And that's the disingenuousness. That's what I, like, that's rough, not empowering.
Right. You know, what I loved, what I found later in the book, when we find out why Cam is in Bitch Planet, because she's looking for her sister, and I'm sure I'm going to say her name wrong, so if you will just tell me how to say her name.
Maroa.
Okay, I didn't want to hit the emphasis on the wrong syllable. When we see Maroa and her partner, Rose.
Yeah.
That is lovely. There's moments when she reaches out and she touches her face. And I found that like such a nice start, because, you know, it's in a terrible moment when they think the whole world is coming down on them. They're not really characters until the end. Like, Maroa is almost, you know, is like Cam's MacGuffin, as it were. Like, she's her reason for being, like, we finally find out why she's there and she's come to save her sister. And, but there's this moment where she and her partner Rose, and it was done in such a tender, really loving way in the middle of all this chaos. And I thought, well, that's so awesome, you know, because you're juxtaposing that with these other kind of leering things and everything that happens with Mieko and all of that. And so you're like, this was just really, really thoughtful. And it's not a big panel, and it's just there for just a second, but it's enough for readers to see that even in this evil place, there is a place for intimacy and love, and where those scenes can be real instead of it just being like a gross, you know, literally a peeping Tom kind of situation. Yeah. So I thought that was real nice, which that always, we were always thinking about the two of them. Like, you obviously knew why Cam was there. We didn't. So was that something that, as you guys were working through that scene when we finally meet Maroa and Rose, that we'd get that? Or was like in the moment as you were writing it, you know, like, you know what we need? We need this moment of humanity in the middle of chaos.
I had the image of Maroa using the blood as lipstick. That was the image I had. Sort of like, we will take the worst of this and we will make ourselves beautiful with it. Like, nice. You can't take this from me. You can't take from me the fact that I see myself as beautiful. You don't get to decide that. And that was, and that I see you as beautiful too. And I've switched the yous there, but that was what I had in that moment. And I'll tell you a story about Rose, and then I think I actually have to get back to my desk, but.
Totally fine. You gave me more time than we agreed, so I'm pleased. Thank you.
I've enjoyed it. Yeah. This has been, you know, very much a learning process. And the trans women in the book are a really important part of the story. And I am not trans, and I know several trans folks, but we're not family, you know?
Sure.
And so I really wanted to make sure we were doing due diligence, you know, and also not asking any one person to carry the weight of representation. So, you know, we have a few, we have several trans characters, and we worked with several trans consultants.
Nice.
And what was really, there were a lot of things I learned, but probably the biggest misunderstanding I had was, it was so important to me. I wanted all of the trans women to pass, right? This is an audio podcast. So you can
yes, see air quotes. Yes.
Air quotes. But I wanted, because I felt like it would be disrespectful otherwise, right?
Yeah.
And I was very kindly corrected. And one of the consultants we worked with said, you know, listen, I transitioned relatively late in life, and I look like a dude in a dress, and I deserve representation too.
Oh.
And that was really transformative moment in my understanding. And Rose was born from that conversation. And I love her so much. And she would not have existed had we not taken the time to listen to these women as they told us where our thinking was wrong, you know?
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. I'm so glad you did that. I mean, there's, again, you know, and you've got such amazing representation of all kinds of folks and of, you know, like you said, all kinds of bodies in here, because obviously Penny has her own standalone backstory, which is heartbreaking.
Penny's everybody's favorite. Hands She's, down, everybody's favorite, Penny. Yeah.
I get, and it's easy for her to be, but I mean, like I said, to me, like Cam, this isn't a superhero comic, but Cam is, like, Cam's a hero.
Cam's the protagonist, but Penny has everybody's heart. Yeah.
She's amazing. She is, and really when you read this, everybody, if you haven't read this yet, you check out Penny's story. Like that, the nice thing about Penny's story is it's really, you could just hand someone that, be like, if you read this backstory issue, if you're not interested in the rest of this book, then you're not going to be, because that is like a heart pulling. It's really beautifully done. Bravo to you guys on that. It was so good. Okay. And again, I want to be respectful of your time. So the last thing I always ask all my guests, and it's weird because it's your book, but the last thing I always ask is if you could recommend this to one person or one kind of person, who would it be? So if you, and it's not to be like, hey, I wrote this book, you should read it. It's not like I'm asking you to stand on a corner and, you know,
peddle
your wares. But like, who's the person who hasn't read Bitch Planet that you think, the kind of person or an individual who should read this?
Boy, I have no idea. I failed your quiz. I don't know. It's read by kind of a surprising breadth of people. I will occasionally, it has been a long time, but of course it's been a long time since an issue came out, but very occasionally we'll get an email from somebody telling me they like it except for the feminist parts, which what? I know, I'm like, well, that's what parts are you reading? I don't know what other parts there are.
There's no other parts. They just like, they like Miyako's dad, I guess, but he's also a feminist, so I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the funniest thing. Oh boy, we get mail. Woo! Woo!
I bet.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'll say this. Was one of the big things for Val and I to make the book was we love exploitation, but there's a but there. If you also love exploitation, but sometimes find it hard to stomach because, oh, I don't know, rapey, rapey, rape, then maybe you should pick this up because you will have a chuckle.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's totally fair. Thank you again. And I'll link to all your stuff. Milkfed Criminal Masterminds is your website. And I've got your Twitter on here. Is there anywhere else that people should find you besides those places?
Twitter at Kelly Sue, Instagram at Kelly Sue D.
Kelly Sue D.
And you can mention the Bitches Get Shit Done list. All right?
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Now, thanks everybody for listening. And I just want to point out that I always end with a song and I was torn on what to do here, because there's so many great songs that have bitch in the title. So what I decided to do is the intro song you heard is I'm a Bitch by Missy Elliott. And we're gonna end with a cover, actually, the great Tina Turner singing Elton John's The Bitch Who's Back. Make sure you follow Kelly Sue, you go to her website, Milkfed Criminals, you follow her on the Bitch Get Shit Done list, which I do. You can follow me on social media at Tricycle Boombox, or you know, catch me on DC Comics News or Fantastic Universes, or go to my website, arfarina.com, where you can send me notes there. I get emails directly from there. So thanks, everybody, and I will see you next time.